Ed Pohl, principal of Law Biz Management, interviews Gail Carson, president of Carson Research Center, on the topic of time management. While no one can truly manage time, Gail shows us how to pick up 22 8-hour days over a year's time. That would make one very interesting vacation, or allow us to do a lot of additional billable work.
Our topic today is time management, and I know that everybody talks about it. It's almost like Mark Twain said about the weather. Everybody talks about it, but nobody can do anything about it. It seems to me that there are fewer people today to be able to do things that we want to have done. There are more demands on personal time, and there are constant interruptions. How are we supposed to handle that today?
Well, I think the most important thing is to focus on what your goals are for the day or for the week. I think if you go ahead and prioritize what is most important to get done, that's your beginning point.
So what you're talking about in essence then is we're not really managing time. There's nothing we can do about time. The clock keeps moving. We can't change that unless you're the actor and you talk about the future and going back and forth. But aside from that, we can't change that. But what we do have power over, I think you're saying, is what we want to accomplish, is our priorities. Is that right?
Absolutely, and certainly every single person is in a different situation. You know, some people have a sole proprietorship, and so they're the only ones, and they have to do everything in their business. Some people have a complete staff. Some attorneys, for example, are even working out of their homes. I mean, and they have families to worry about. So there's a lot of different circumstances, but basically you have to decide what is the most important thing you must get done that day, and then structure everything else around it.
Well, as you know, law is a profession where the unexpected is the expected. So how is it that we schedule that kind of a day?
Well, it's interesting because you're absolutely right. I mean, that is normally the way it's done, although there are some attorneys who are very difficult to reach. Their practices are thriving, and one of the reasons why is because they are difficult to get a hold of. But when they are in seclusion, shall we say, they are doing what they are supposed to do in terms of research or formulating the cases and so forth, and when they get back to their client, they usually have the right answers. So it can be done a couple of different ways. You can be always available. You can have your secretary or your assistant answer some of the questions or get them to you, and you get the answers to them, and they call the person back. But, again, I guess it depends on the kind of law you're practicing.
Well, one of the things I know a client of mine taught me was that when you've got a very busy practice, you always have to schedule things. And managing the unexpected is not something that they do on a regular basis. For example, this particular lawyer had 125 telephone calls almost every day. And what they found was, as you're suggesting, is that more than 80% of those calls were process calls that the paralegal could answer.
Absolutely.
And the other calls, when the lawyer was in court or otherwise not available, the receptionist or the paralegal made a specific and time-certain appointment when the lawyer would call the client back. And that's one way of scheduling the time out.
Absolutely. And I think there's two different issues here. Number one, in terms of the attorney, I think that what needs to be done and what I was going to suggest, and you kind of alluded to it here, is they really need to take a two-week period and monitor what's going on in their day. In other words, how many phone calls do they get? How many interruptions do they get? What are those interruptions? Who are those people? How many crises are there really in a day? And just kind of look at their week for 2 weeks, and there is going to be a pattern, whether anyone believes it or not. There is going to be a pattern, and then they can more successfully really determine what their day should look like. The other part is on the client's part, and that is everything that happens to a client that has to do with the law is a panic situation because they're not familiar with it. If they're sophisticated and if they've been through this 100 times, you know, they know it's going to go in a particular order, and they're not coming with handcuffs right there and then to take them away. But if you are not familiar with this, and this is not something you have run into a lot of times, you really do panic because you think that you walk out your door and something bad's going to happen.
So what you're really saying is a reflection, I think, of what I talk about in the collecting your fee context, and that is you have to educate your client.
Absolutely.
So in the first session, the intake session with your client, not only do you talk about what the matter is, what they want, and so forth, you also talk about their obligation to pay your fee when you bill it. And also, it seems to me, you then have to talk to them about what you expect of them and what they should expect to you vis-a-vis the phone, vis-a-vis returning communication.
I think that's very important, Ed, and I'll tell you why. Because we do set the expectations of our clients. We do set the expectations of what they think is going to happen. And unfortunately, I have found, and I'm going to say this on a personal bias, many attorneys that I have worked with are frantic themselves, and therefore they think they're explaining something to the client because they know it so well. But if someone has not really been through it, or if they're very sensitive because of the situation they're in, they're not going to hear it the first time anyway. It's got to be repeated over and over and possibly even given to them in written form so they can see it and absorb it. So I think it's absolutely a process of education.
You make a very good point, and that is we do not have a business unless our clients have stress. And when somebody is in stress and they come to us, it could be good stress or bad stress, but it's still stress.
Absolutely.
When they come to us in a stressful environment, they oftentimes can't hear it, even if we know, and even if there were a tape recorder of it, that we were telling them exactly what they needed to know, and we have to say it more than once in more than one way.
Well, I'm sure you know this, Ed, but in interpersonal communication, and any communication, the statistics say that something has to be repeated 6 times to 7 times before we hear it. And so whether that's verbally or written form or however it's done, it's time-consuming. We're talking about time management. It's time-consuming. But the average person who has not been trained well in listening skills has to have something repeated almost 7 times.
Well, Gail, let's talk about another form of communication for a moment, and that's the Internet and email. I know in my own practice as a coach and a consultant, I wind up on the Internet 2 or 3 hours a day as a minimum, responding to emails and checking to see if I have emails and so forth. How is it that I can control the paper, the email, the faxes, and all the other forms of communication other than the telephone, which we've been talking about, that are part of my business life?
Are you asking me how do you control the telephone?
Well, how do we control the paper? How do we control the email as part of this time management?
I'm not sure you ever control the email or the Internet or that type of thing, because unless you have very good spam filters. But you have to, of course, be accessible for your clients, again, who may use that as a form of communication. But, again, I think your receptionist, your assistant, your paralegal, whomever, can get through those emails and see which are the most pertinent and the ones that you need to see. And if you are comfortable with that, that's another way of getting you the most important things that you have to see with your own eyes.
So in this particular case, we're again, I think, talking about priorities.
Exactly. I mean, my emails are probably between the three different businesses that I have. They're about 300 a day, and that's a lot. And I don't see it getting any less. And so I have to make up my mind, and I must tell you, I use the delete function much more than I ever did a year ago. But it's what's happening now. So people have to be very clear that they are sending an email. They have to be very clear that it's very important, or else it's going to be deleted. And you yourself have to use a spam filter so that you can just go through what's in the spam box and delete the whole thing if you see they're not important.
And when we're talking about 300, we're not talking about all the spam and advertising. We're talking about an honest-to-goodness 300, and that's how you do it.
Exactly.
Okay. So what then is perhaps the single most important thing that you would recommend for us to be able to improve our time management?
I think the most important thing, and I'm going to say this as an individual basis, a personal basis, is for the person who wants to get better at time management to really say, what are my goals? Now, this starts, you know, with the goal setting for the year, for the quarter, for the month, for the week, for the day. But to say, what is the most important thing I have to get done today? And, or what are the three most important things I have to get done today? And you need to make sure those are the things that get done before anything else. I mean, we all have basic things that we need to do. We have to get up, we have to get dressed, we have to get out. But for example, one of my passions is exercise. And I know that if I leave exercise for the end of the day, it's not going to happen. I'm either too tired or there's too many other interruptions or whatever it happens to be. And I know if I don't do it as soon as I get up in the morning, for example, I have already exercised this morning, it won't get done. Now, that goes on 7 days a week, except on a day that I might travel all day and then it's just impossible and I'm not going to strain my body even further by exercising. But if I don't get it done first thing in the morning, I know that it's not going to get done. Now, some people would say, well, you know, what's so important about exercise? But I know it keeps me healthy. I know it keeps my energy level up. I know it prevents a lot of other things from happening to me. And I know I feel 100% better when I do it. So no matter what, I do that first. And I think that's what people, and then I go on with my business day. So I think there are things that people have to look at and say, okay, what are the things I need to do personally that are imperative? What is the thing that's going to be most important for my business today? For example, we're doing the interview today. That was important. Another priority is I have another appointment later this afternoon and another one later in the afternoon. Those are three appointments I must keep today. So you have to look at each day on its own. But are the things that you're doing in a day, do they really have anything to do with where you want to go? I often think that there are many cases that attorneys handle that they really wish they didn't, and that is a choice, like anything else. I do consulting, and there are clients that I will work with, and there are clients I won't work with. And I think in many cases that needs to be the priority with attorneys as well.
So it's not a question of what we choose, in this case, your exercise. It's a question that at a personal level and a professional level, what is it that we as an individual select? And then that it becomes our priorities.
Absolutely.
We're not
that
saying
changes.
Right.
Well,
we're not saying that everybody should exercise.
No.
That's a different issue. That's a judgment call.
Exactly.
Okay.
But so is the kind of practice you develop.
Absolutely. It reminds me of when I was practicing law, a divorce that I handled, and one of the reasons that the guy was involved with the divorce is because he worked so hard. He was a workaholic, as most of our listeners are, and he spent very little time with the family. And it almost, we used the acronym in them, at the end of saying that this fella had a leftover marriage. In other words, whatever time he had left over, that's the time he spent on the marriage. And it didn't work after a while. It wasn't enough.
And, you know, it's not just attorneys. There are many business people who are in the same circumstance. And I think that's why your day, your goals, your plans, your time changes as you go through these different phases. As you have young children, you have children who may be involved in a lot of athletic activities as they go on to college. I mean, there's just, you yourself go through so many different patterns and different life changes that your time changes as well, and how you handle what you do changes as well, depending on what your life is like.
So in part, we're talking about a balance, and that balance changes from time to time. But what does not change is that for every day, we have to create a list of priorities that we want to achieve, things we want to achieve that day, and that's how we manage our time.
And part B of that is to then schedule that, look at it realistically, and see if you really do have time for all of the things that you have on your list, because most of the time, people never cross off everything that is on their to-do list. They have actually put down too many things or not been realistic about the amount of time each thing they have on their list takes.
All right, Gail, let's go to the final question, the $64 that shows my age, the $64 question, and that is, how is it that we can free up more time to do more things that we want to get done?
How can you do it? Are you asking me how can you?
Yes, how can we free up more time?
I think the most important thing is to figure out, first of all, I think one of the ways is to delegate. There are a lot of things that we take on ourselves that can be delegated to other people, and we could spend our time and our energies in a much more profitable and productive way. So I think there are things that we do that we shouldn't be doing. That's number one. Number two, I think we need to look at the payoff. In other words, we may schedule time, for example, with our families. Maybe they don't want us around that much. In other words, maybe it's not important to a kid to have us here, there, and everywhere. We need to look at that. We need to look at our clients and say, you know, are we going to give them 15 minutes, 30 minutes, 1 hour? How long does this really take? Because some of us get involved in all this extemporaneous conversation. So the thing is to look at really how are you now spending your time. And one of the ways you do that is by this 2 weeks of monitoring what is actually taking my time, what should I be doing, what should I not be doing. And it'll be amazing. You will pick up, if you pick up 30 minutes a day, Ed, 30 minutes a day gives you at the end of a year 22 8-hour days, which is normally a month in a normal work week. I know not in an attorney's work week, but it will give you 22 8-hour days, and that's a lot. So every year I try to get a month better.
That's an incredible statistic. Gail, thank you very much for joining us and for revealing some really interesting concepts, not only about how to manage our time in setting priorities, but how also to have more time available for us to do more of what we want to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Ed.
You have been listening to a Law Biz podcast. For more podcasts, please visit www.lawbiz.com/podcasts.html. Feel free to tell your friends and colleagues about Law Biz podcasts. You may duplicate this program in part or in whole, provided that you retain appropriate attribution and copyright notices.